neighbors. Welcome to Fit to Eat, the Newfoundland Labrador Farm and Food Show. I'm Ivan Emke, your host. This is episode number 46. There's one area of local consumption that seems to get more than its share of excitement. It's the kind of publicity that may make turnip and cabbage farmers envious. Of course, I'm talking about local craft brewing. And one of the characteristics of this sector is the amount of cooperation that the new brewers generally enjoy. They share ideas and materials and, most importantly, tips on how to fill out forms. There's a need for patience as the regulators figure out how to put in place reasonable regulations. Now, people in this province have been brewing beer for many generations, but these new craft brewers and distillers have ratcheted up this backyard activity several notches in quality and variety. Oh, and they're legal as well.
The process took three times as long as we thought through the red tape, the duct tape, the electrical tape, the blue tape. Quarter after six on opening night, we finally got our liquor license for the tap room. I mean, stress. Just because it's not built by a Chinese robot doesn't mean it can't work. My dad was down at Tim Hortons and one of the guys cornered him and like, so you're going to have local beer? He's like, well, making it on site. You can't get much more local than that. He said, no, local beer like Coors Light and Bud Light.
Today, we head out of Deer Lake on the Viking Trail, take a turn to the north of the Cormac Highway. Just under 10 kilometers in, we come to the Crooked Feeder Brewery and Tap Room. This place is profoundly local, from the building, to the products they sell, to the machines they use to brew the beer, to the varieties of beer that they make. It's all a part of a very conscious effort to champion their community. Pull up a stool. Join us. If we're lucky, there may just be some tasting.
I'm Robert Sutton. This is Crooked Feeder Brewing. We're about 8.5 kilometers in Cormac on my family's former sawmill property.
So that's where your logo comes from?
Yes, the logo came from as the huge blade that we used to use when we were cutting pine. That was the sort of the business here was pine moldings and furniture and those sorts of things. Yep.
So you grew up in that? That's the industry you started?
Yes. My parents built this place in 1983 and they ran it here for 25 years before the market conditions were just that they weren't making a living and they were getting older. So mom went back to working as a waitress and dad went driving trucks.
So this place was empty?
Yeah, it was a big giant storage basically.
And it was calling to you.
Yes.
What was it saying?
It was saying we need to do something, but it actually, it sort of came from Corey, the other business partner, Corey White. Yeah. He bought a kegerator for his new house. Okay. And once he was done building the house, he's like, awful expensive to put a keg in the kegerator. I said, well, I used to make a little bit of homebrew back in the day, so let's try that. And at the same time, my neighbor across the street had owned a homebrew shop at one point, and he used to do keg carbonating with Coke kegs and Pepsi kegs, so he had given me some of this stuff. So we kind of fell into it, and we made some homebrew. It was terrible. We drank it all.
Of course.
And then we said,
research purposes,
what can we do that is more better? So then we went online, and we started watching videos, and we started, and we made our first batch of beer was a clone of Sam Adams Summer Ale, and it was horrible. And we come to find out that the brew that we cloned was also horrible. Then we started with a light beer, because Corey was a Bud Light drinker to the core, and we started making light beers, and we started making really good beers, and people kept saying, oh, we should open a brewery, and we're like, oh, we looked into it, and it was so expensive, and it was so hard, you'd have gone to hire a brewer and this and that. So then the girls in Port Rexon opened up, and we thought about it again, and we still kind of shelved it. We're like, no, we just can't. And then when Pasadena Brewery opened up, they were nice enough to let us have a walkthrough, and I was looking around, I was like, you know what, this is familiar. This is just a big, empty warehouse that they brought some stuff in, and they're making it work. So I just decided that I was going to do it. And Ray Brake, the other business partner, he's a serial entrepreneur. And he said, well, can I come on board too? I was like, sure. So then we started developing a business plan. And I phoned my parents and said, can we use the building? They're like, what for? And I was like, making beer. And instead of saying something to try to bring a bit of reality to the situation, they're like, no, can we work there? So then we started. But now we started looking at it in April of 2017. We had a conversation with the girls in Port Rexton. And they told us how expensive it was going to be. And that our budgets weren't going to work out for us. And I said, okay. Yeah. So then I started digging into it, and we had the building here, and then we started an Indiegogo campaign. We raised a little bit of money through that. But we assumed we were going to be open in October of 2017. But the more we got into it, the more government departments we got through, the red tape, the duct tape, the electrical tape, the blue tape. It just took us so much longer, and every process took three times as long as we thought. Yeah. So finally, we got open in November of 2018. In the meantime, our meager little budget we had kept getting slowly eroded every roadblock we ran into. So instead of buying a factory system, one of the guys said, well, why don't we check with some local fab companies? So the Tin Man, I did some drawings. I said, can you build this? And they said, yes. I said, can you do it food grade? They said, we're going to check into it and we'll get back to you. Because they do dairy work. They did a little test pot for us and a test fermenter. And I had to send it back for a couple little mods. And then we didn't even get to put it into production before we were too far in it. We're like, you know what? Here's the designs for the bigger system. Build it. And they build it in short order. We brought in all the valves and the parts from an Ontario company because they've got all the stainless steel fittings that are food grade. The guys at the Tin Man stitched it all together. We brought in control panel components, put that all together. And everybody said, you can't build your own gear. And I was like, that don't really mean anything to me here. Yeah. I said, the monks were making beer in the 1500s in the woods over a fire. Just because it's not built by a Chinese robot doesn't mean it can't work. So we brought the system in here. We started testing it. Like, people got shoestring budgets. Well, have you ever tore apart a shoestring and you see it's made all those little strings? Yeah. That's what we were on. One of those little strings.
So it's local beer, not only some of the products that are made here, but it's the material that's making it or the machine that's making
machinery.
It.
We're the only people that we know of that had our brew gear fabricated here and we stitched it together here. One way we look at it, we didn't borrow a lot of money to start this place. So if there's anything that hiccups along the way, we can weather the storm because we don't have large overhead. We're working it ourselves. My parents work here. They're letting us use this building for a few years. Yeah. We're on 2 acres. We've got an enormous ability to expand and develop. And we wanted to be a small mom and pop type shop, but this place has taken on a life of its own. This is a hobby gone mad. Like, we just can't make beer fast enough.
Yeah. When you first made beer, you probably did, like a lot of people, you had the malts and so on, the syrups. When you go to the mash, is that where you say, oh yeah, I can actually do really good beer?
That's where change was. Some people go from the basic malt kit, then to like a little hybrid one that's got some steeping grains, and then they go in like partial mashes and this and that. But we went from the can of stuff right to the mash. We built our mash tun, we built our wort chiller, we got a good pot come in, and that's where we kind of started. And then we were making some really good beers, and then we scaled up our pot a bit so we could start making quarter barrel batches, which is a full keg, and that started working out good. And all of the beer we make are most of the recipes that we like to drink ourselves. And Liam McKenna at Yellow Belly said, always brew what you like to drink, and you'll find the same people who like what you like, and you'll always do a good job.
That's true. Like, if you're brewing a beer that you don't like, you don't know if it's good quality or not.
No, and we made a bitter. We had never had a bitter. We just made it. And Corey's got like a sixth sense for recipe creation, and when he's done, like, I'll just brew it with no hesitation because I know that he knows that it's going to work out. And we brewed a bitter and we kind of liked it. And is it good? I said, we don't know. So we sent it out, and people who are bitter drinkers said, yep, this is excellent. So it just worked out. People say to us too, what's your background? And we're like, Google and YouTube, right? So how'd you learn how to build this? Google. What about instrumentation? Google. If you can't find it on the internet, it don't need to be done. No, and discussions with the other breweries. If you run into a problem, so our brew system is most similar to Split Rock's brew system. Twillingy. Yep. So, I mean, I've messaged Matt several times, say, what are you doing for this? And how's this working? And they're always really friendly, and everybody's always game to help you out a little bit.
If I were to start a, how much should I set aside? Like, what does it cost to start a brewery?
A small startup, what I'm getting the feel from some of the other brewers, you need a good $400,000, $500,000 with a building.
Yeah. With a building.
Yeah. Or, now, I mean, if you can get going fast enough and lease in a place, because, I mean, buying stuff out of the box and having tradespeople come set up things. And
so do you get your grains from, what's that? Is that possible?
Not possible. Yet. Yeah. So there's a lot of the farms here are growing barley, malting barley. Ian Richardson, Larch Grove Farms, he grows malting barley for the distillery company, but he's got way more than they can take. And he was asking me about it just this week, and I said, it needs to be malted for us. We can't deal with it. So I've heard rumors that somebody in Black Duck was going to start a malting facility, and there's enough craft breweries to at least the base grains.
Yes.
So that's like your white flour, and you know, it's probably 60% or 80% of the base grain, and then a few special specialty grains. So even if they were growing base grain and it was being malted here, at least if we could get that here, it'd eliminate, you know, and it would prop up the farms and stuff here. And now the neighbor's farm, he has 16, 18 head of cattle, and he takes all of our spent grains.
Yeah. That goes for cattle feed or?
Pigs, chickens, ducks, and the cattle last.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because when the pigs are growing in the summertime, they eat an enormous amount of grain, and they love the grain from here, and it's loaded with water. They stick their nose down into it, and he comes here with the basket, picks up the grain. We don't have to worry about it every day. We dump it, it's gone.
Is there a piece of music that I could use? Is there something you listen to when you're brewing?
When I'm brewing, I've got some kind of a rock mix on, but when I'm here by myself in the quiet, my favorite song to listen to is actually the Edmund Fitzgerald. I love
the original Gordon Lightfoot version?
Okay. I poke that on when I'm on it, man. My wife comes in, it's like, what do you listen to?
The legend lives on from the Chippewa on down at the big lake they call Gitchagumi. The lake, it is said, never gives up her dead when the skies of November turn gloomy. With a load of iron ore, 26,000 tons more than the Edmund Fitzgerald weighed empty. That good ship and true was a bone to be chewed when the gales of November came early. The ship was the pride of the American side, coming back from some mill in Wisconsin. As the big freighters go, it was bigger than most, with a crew and good captain well seasoned. Concluding some terms with a couple of steel firms when they left fully loaded for Cleveland. Then later that night when the ship's bell rang, could it be the north wind they'd been feeling? The wind and the wires made a tattletale sound, and the wave broke over the railing. And every man knew, as the captain did too, 'twas the witch of November come stealing. The dawn came late and the breakfast had to wait when the gales of November came slashing. When afternoon came, it was freezing rain in the face of a hurricane west wind. When supper time came, the old cook came on deck saying, "Fellas, it's too rough to feed you." At 7 p.m. a main hatchway gave in. He said, "Fellas, it's been good to know you." The captain wired in, he had water coming in, and the good ship and crew was in peril. And later that night when his lights went out of sight, came the wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald.
That's Gordon Lightfoot's The Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald, by request of my guest today, Robert Sutton. In this second section of the interview, we talk about why they set up in Cormac, their types of beer, and what they're doing to make visiting their place into an experience.
People say, you know, Cormac, what a terrible place for a brewery. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, the building was free for now. We're in the biggest tourism corridor there is.
Yeah.
And I went to Derlick for everything in my life. So I said, people can come here. We're on the biggest tourism, one of the bigger tourism corridors. So the amount of people we've seen this summer, when we only opened the tap room in late July, all over the world, people like from Australia.
How did they find out about you? You're here 8.5 kilometers up the road.
Google. Facebook and Google.
Really?
A lot of great press this year from Galliot Studios and the Cat Stop. Those are tourism meccas.
Do they carry your beers?
Yes, both of those. Yep. So they were basically, other than Newfound Sushi and ourselves, they were our mainstays.
Okay.
And one or two places in St. John's when we could spare beer, but we were very tight on beer all summer.
Yeah.
So the people would go to the Cat Stop, they'd do their tour, they'd have some food, have a beer. It's like, okay, now we need to go find this place. Now this winter, we're going to do some soups and chilies and stuff because this is the snowmobiling place to be. The Groom Trail is about a kilometer and a half from here. You can get to it very easily. And this is a a mainstay through here to get to the gorge. And Cormac, I didn't realize till last winter when we opened a brewery, even though we didn't have a tap room, is full in the winter. Every Airbnb, every cottage, every accommodation is full snowmobilers. Yeah. And then they got nothing to do in the evenings. Yeah. So we're figuring Saturdays and Sundays we'll have a good pot of chili, pot of stew on. Yeah. And we might even consider like 9 o'clock in the morning opening up and having some coffee on and some Danishes and whatever. Right. Just to see if people want something like that here, because there's not a lot to do. I'm going to try to get a good coffee machine from the crew at Grossmore Coffee Roasters.
Oh, yeah. I see you've got their coffee here.
We have their coffee here. Well, we started putting it in our Grossmore Coffee Porter, and there's 2 pounds of their beans for every keg of beer we brew.
Really?
So we don't brew coffee and pour it in. We steep the beans in the fermenter, and it just gives a great flavor, and we did it from the beginning, so now we can't back off because it works well. Yeah. So we said, you know what? Everybody loves the beer, and they're looking for your coffee. Can we, you know, retail it here for you this summer? And they said we were one of their biggest sellers for coffee, was people coming through here and buying bags of coffee. They're local. We carry them. Janice Hardy, she's got a little piece of my art here in Cormac, and she did the coasters, and she's doing a paint and a pint night here next Friday night.
Oh, okay, so activities.
So we're carrying her things here, and then we get our t-shirts made at Empire Atlantic in Cornerbrook.
Yeah.
We could go further afield, but why do that? Our hats come from the trophy shop. We carry muffins and stuff on the weekends from Melissa Rumble. She's renting, she's working out of the kitchen at the Legion. We get beef from Ian Richardson for our pub. We can't say shop local and then not shop local. We gotta be a cog in the wheel. If everybody supports each other, everybody wins.
Yeah. So having a brewery and all this other stuff wasn't enough. You have a restaurant in Cornerbrook that you took
over. Yeah, we needed the footprint in the city. And we were looking to have a retail shop, and we were looking to maybe do some kind of a little tap room, but the opportunity arose, so we just decided to tackle it. Tap space is very hard to come by. Yeah. Big Beer owns the taps, and that's their right. They paid for them, but we can't afford to put infrastructure in a lot of places, so we decided, you know what, let's put in our own 14 taps. Yeah. So that's what we did, and now keeping 14 taps stocked on 5 fermenters is a little difficult, but we've got 3 new fermenters from the Tin Man to hook up, just haven't been able to find enough downtime.
So they continue to make fermenters for you?
They made 3 more, and but now that's enough small fermenters, so we may, when we're ready, have to get some Chinese robot fermenters.
Yeah.
If we ever want to get to the point where we want to do some canning, we need more production capacity.
So you've thrown around a number of names of other craft brewers around in the province. Is it a pretty tight network?
Pretty good, yeah. Like, just this morning, I dropped off a component to Jim McDonald at Western Newfoundland Brew Company, like a Secret Cove, those 2 bags of grain came back from Secret Cove because I lent them to him a few weeks back because he was short to do with one of his beers. Now and then, like, I'll get stuff dropped to Bootleg from one of the shipping companies, and or they'll borrow some grain, or we'll borrow some grain. And
So how many beers do you have on tap right now?
Here in our beers, we've got our Something Local, which is our answer to light beer. Because my dad was down at Tim Hortons, and one of the guys cornered him, and like, so you're going to have local beer? He's like, we're making it on site. You can't get much more local than that.
Yeah.
He said, no, local beer, like Coors Light and Bud Light. And dad just said to shake his head and walk away. And I said, well, we need a really super light beer because we want something here for everyone. So we've got light beers to the darkest beers. So we decided to brew the light beer, like Coors Light, and call it Something Local. as an ironic answer to the question. So our Bombay Blonde is a golden ale. It's a pretty, it's a nice light beer with a little bit of flavor on the back end. And that was supposed to be our lightest beer. But when we brewed it first, people were like, what do you got this lighter? I was like, water. And so then we brewed our Run of the Mill, which I don't have on tap now. Yeah. We alternate the Run of the Mill into Something Local. But we figured Run of the Mill was a great play on word for this location. And then we've got our Big Falls Pale Ale. That's a hoppier beer, but not quite as hoppy as an IPA. Our Bunker C Double Chocolate Oatmeal Stout, that was one of our, it was one of my favorite beers that we used to brew. So most of our things are local or forestry related because of where we're coming from.
Yeah.
So Bunker C, I mean, that's what feeds the pulp mill. And it's dark, like, you know, so we said, okay, we'll call it Bunker C. We've got our Grossmore Coffee Porter, which is new, and our Spillway IPA, that was it was our IPA that we brewed all along, and Corey was driving up one day to here, and he was like, why don't we call it Spillway IPA?
Yeah, of course.
Just as he drove by Spillway, because just that little rhyme on roll off the tongue. So now our sour beer is new, and that's actually a sour IPA. So since the Spillway was next to Deer Lake Power, we said, well, we'll call it Deer Lake Power Sour. And our White River Wit, so we did brew a wit beer with some wheat that came off of the farms up here. So White River Road is a big farming area. So we said we'll have our White River Wit, and our Ride Out Red is our red ale, but the Ride Outs are the biggest farmers here in the community. Right now, I mean, there's 9 beers on tap here, and we've got a a few more that we brew and intermixed them.
The people who buy your beer, are they also into buying local food?
A lot of people are. And now my cousin Gordon Hancock from Deer Lake, he just started this group on Facebook called Western Newfoundland Shop Local.
That.
And he's been a real big driver behind it. And we try to drive it ourselves as well. And we tell the farmers here, if you can grow it, that we can use it, we're going to take it.
It's kind of an interesting example of how you guys were self-provisioning in beer, but then you made it into a business.
Yes.
So that self-provisioning, there's another step that can become an economic generator.
Right? Yes. Turning a hobby into a business is a pretty rewarding.
You haven't all quit your jobs yet.
No. I took a month off needed to sort of help boost this pace up, and then I'm going back. So the next step is to hire on. So my dad works here all week long, but he needs help.
Yeah.
So we're going to try to hire now. There's a local kid whose job is finishing up here now. He's on a community project. Hard worker, know the family, because this is a small town, and so he's pretty keen to get his feet wet here. And funny enough, last week there was a young girl in here from Belgium in her third year of her brewmaster's course. She said, please keep me in mind next summer when you're looking for employees. And she said, I would love to move to Newfoundland.
You could end up with some Belgian beers here then.
Possibly, right?
Yeah.
But my biggest thing is I'd really like to hire somebody local here at Cormac because we want to help build the community up here. And this community is getting a lot to offer now because, I mean, there's a honeybee farm now just out the road here, and he's doing berries as well. And then there's the goat farm that just started with the creamery, plus the D&D Abattoir here. Yeah. They're doing a massive amount of lamb farming.
Yeah.
And then Rocky Brook Farms is, now they live here in Cormac, but they're farming in Rocky Brook area in Reedville. Yeah. So it's just, there's so much going on. This place is booming pretty well, you know.
In a musty old hall in Detroit, they prayed in the Maritime Sailor's Cathedral. The church bell chimed till it rang 29 times for each man on the Edmund Fitzgerald. And the legend lives on from the Chippewa on down of the big lake they call Gitche-Gumee. Superior, they said, never gives up or dead when the gales of November come early.
That's part of Gordon Lightfoot's The Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald, as requested by my guest today. And yes, when we left the tap room, as the customers were arriving, he had this very song cranked on the sound system. In this last section, we talk about the need for help in making it through the regulations and the idea of a coach for entrepreneurs.
The history of the community is on the back of our growlers. That was the thing. Like, we didn't want to just have some quirky story. We wanted to say, this is what this place is about, right? This place was built on hard work, and the brewery's been built on hard work.
You mentioned earlier on that there were a few T's to cross and I's to dot and so on. There's a little bit of regulation. Is that something that would hold people up? Like, do you have to have a lot of resolve to continue to get through that?
It slows you down, and you got to persevere. And, like, if say we had been paying a lease on this place in the beginning, it would have been insurmountable for us. But now, I mean, if I had to do it again, I would probably have an easier time to do it. So a little bit of, you know, there's a lot of regulation.
Yeah.
And I mean, each department takes their own amount of time to get things done. But maybe if I had done my research a little better as well, and because I had rose-colored glasses on getting started, that it was going to be easy. But I mean, everybody wants to do a good job. So things take time. Knowing what I know now, I'd probably still do it, but I would do things differently. I mean, it's all necessary. I mean, you know, you got fire safety and building accessibility and
water,
everything. You know, environmental concerns.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, I had to explain that I wasn't going to be generating 15,000 tons of waste a year.
Yeah.
But I mean, but I had to go back and I just laid out the math. And once I did, they're like, oh, that makes sense. And they checked it out. But if I had known enough first, I could have laid it out in my submission.
And that's where other breweries sort of help new brewers sometimes and say, well, this is.
Well, exactly. Yeah. Like there was a fellow thinking about starting up a small place in St. John's. I said, be aware that you have all of the same hoops to jump through that we did. So I said, on your plan, stress this. Keep in mind, you've got to do this. We had some funding through TCII. Great to work with. But I almost think that when you're starting a business in Newfoundland, everybody should almost have a caseworker that helps them through everything and sort of like almost like a driver to say, you know what, we got to get this guy open. We got to get him open. Let's help pave the way, because there's a documentary about in Nova Scotia how the craft breweries are revitalizing all the small communities.
Yeah.
And that's happening here.
Yeah.
The girls those in Port Rexon are the poster people for that. They're just doing big things in a small and showing that it can work. Yeah. And their tourism corridor is 60,000 people. And I was quoted that it was 150,000 passing Cormac turnoff to go to Gros Morne.
Right.
And Goody Hutchings was here and told me that it's closer to 250,000. So somebody said, you know, you don't want to grab 1 in 10 people. I said, no one wants to grab 1 in 30 people. Because 1 in 10 people, and we're going to be overwhelmed.
So crossroads of the world.
Well, here, this is inside of Cormac, right?
Yes.
And out where Fallon is, that's outside. And that was was a thing when we were growing up, right? You're from inside and you're from outside.
Where's the outside? Where's the boundary?
Out around where Luff's store used to be. That conglomerate of houses out there, that's outside
of Cormac.
This is inside. And it was no big wars or rivalries. It was just a distinction.
You just knew it. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But basically, that's where the cable TV cut off, too, right?
I see.
They brought it in so far, and then they wouldn't break. The houses were too sparse in here, too.
So inside, Cormac didn't have cable.
Nope.
Maybe that was good for you.
Probably. I was busy and working in sawmill anyway.
That's right.
Yeah. So we've got a lot of manicuring to do to the property here now, because, this was industrial for a long time. So now that we've got this area done, we're starting to work on the outside.
Yeah.
We're attached to a big warehouse now that we're going to do in and finish up. Yeah. And then we've got enough room here to my parents' lawn is 3/4 acre. We're thinking maybe next summer to get some bands in and have a whole to-do, right?
Yeah.
And we got to get a quasi-food license here to do some preps, some stuff prepped elsewhere.
Yeah.
But if we get the right thing in place, we might do some smoking and stuff here and get some real authentic barbecue on the go. And so my friend Brendan, he's with cooking like we are with brewing. He's like a Google expert and a phenomenal chef, basically.
Yeah.
So we're thinking about building a smoker and doing some stuff. And
it's great. It's very inspiring. Probably tiring.
It's tiring, but when you look around it, you've made something from not nothing, but next to nothing, because this was just an empty warehouse. And what the three of us have built here, well, not really the three of us, it's the six of us and our families, because there's a lot of sacrifice everywhere, right? So Ray and his wife, they live at the pub down there making sure that place is singing. Like if I need a new beer, Corey would be 30 hours working on that beer.
Yeah.
And in the meantime, then he's not spending time with his family.
Yeah.
I'm here all the time. My wife is here a lot. So there's sacrifices everywhere.
Right.
And then my parents were going to sell this old property for their nest egg, and now they're sitting on it. So they work here, which is not really working out for them, because here they are now. They don't have their nest egg, and I'm making them work. But they really, it's given them a new lease on life too, because they were sitting around doing nothing and getting old. And now they're on the go. They're gone to Vegas for 10 days now.
Okay.
Yeah. So I was like, that doesn't really work for me. But so they worked hard for a long time here as the sawmill and that. And this is their third vacation in 45 years. And it's their third vacation in the last 3 years.
So the last three
years is the first time they've ever been able to go and do these things.
Yeah.
Working here with us sort of gives them that little retirement,
You're surrounded by food growers here. What's your favorite local food?
The root crop, right?
The root crop.
You get that fall Jake's Dinner vegetable. Now, they're experimenting with some new stuff here now, the kohlrabi. Cabbage, turnip, carrot, potato, greens, beets.
Rob, thanks so much for taking the time, because you probably have things to do.
Well, today, actually, I'm opening at 1. Now, we've got a craft beer show in Grand Falls tomorrow night from 7 to 10. So my wife and I are going, and four of our friends, so we got a tap each. We're taking six different kinds of beer. They sold 600 tickets in 3 hours for their craft beer festival.
There's an appetite for it.
Yeah.
All the best.
Yes. Thanks a lot.
Take care.
Yeah. You too.
Yet to meet a craft brewer who doesn't sell all she or he makes. Clearly, we're nowhere near the saturation point for capacity in the Newfoundland Labrador craft beer market. And yes, there was some tasting, all grand, and a growler for later. If you're at all inclined toward local beer, head out for an experience. Get off the secondary highways, but if you lack a taste for adventure, check out the Crooked Feeder Gastropub in downtown Cornerbrook. Tell them Radio sent you.
Think that when you're starting a business in Newfoundland, everybody should almost have a caseworker, almost like a driver, to say, you know what, we got to get this guy open, we got to get him open, let's help pave the way. We tell the farmers here, if you can grow it that we can use it, we're going to take it. We can't say shop local and then not shop local. We got to be a cog in the wheel. If everybody supports each other, everybody wins.
This has been Fit to Eat, the Newfoundland Labrador Farm and Food Show. To listen to other episodes of this show or for more information, go to fittoeatnl.ca. The song for today's show was the Canadian classic The Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald by Gordon Lightfoot. The theme music, Cuckold Hen, was performed this week by guitarist Steve Bauman. This is a production of Kitchen Table Communications. I'm Ivan Emke. Join me again next time. Happy trails.
This is a hobby gone mad.